was there.
Good evening, everyone. We're getting the meeting started. I ask that we all rise to the pledge of the flag.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
House of Clerks, call roll, please.
Ms. Ferguson Smith.
Present.
Dr. Reenix.
Present.
Ms. Kreatek.
Present.
Ms. Leon.
Present.
Dr. Van Wert.
Present.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Present.
And Mr. Cologne.
Present. Thank you, Ms. Miller. Before we consider the regular agenda items for this evening, City Council is going to conduct a public hearing to accept public comment on the request of the intermunicipal transfer of restaurant liquor license number R-11795 from Aiello and Grigolo Inc. at 821 Main Street in Northampton Borough, Northampton County, to Sheets Incorporated at 4th and Emory Streets here in Bethlehem, Northampton County. This public hearing is for informational purposes only. No votes are going to happen during the public hearing. I call the public hearing to order, and I'll start by recognizing a representative of the applicant to address the request for transfer.
Thank you, Mr. President. My name is Mark Kozar. I'm with the law firm of Flaherty and O'Hara. Anytime I get before a group of people, more than two people, I always like to plug my law firm. Our sole area of practice is liquor law and liquor licensing. We do it throughout the state of Pennsylvania and nationwide. This evening I'm here on behalf of Sheets to request that the City of Bethlehem approve the intermunicipal transfer of a liquor license from outside the city to within it, pursuant to revised liquor code Title 47, Section 461B3, for use at a new Sheet store to be located at 1780 East 4th Street. As you know, and a colleague of mine was here not that long ago for Wawa, since 2001, I believe it was, when the law was changed. Can I curl my hair first before you take this? 2001, the law was changed to permit the transfer of a license from anywhere within a county, so long as the receiving municipality, in this case, the City of Bethlehem, introduces a resolution permitting that transfer. In order for you to consider Sheets' application, let me give you a little bit of background on Sheets. Sheets opened its first store in Altoona, Pennsylvania in 1952. Since that time, Sheets has grown to 700 stores in six states. The majority of the Sheets stores sell beer and wine, including 278 stores here in Pennsylvania that are selling both beer and wine. We have four licenses that are currently in safekeeping, awaiting the completion of stores, and one application that is pending. As you probably know, Sheets is in the process of building a new store at 1780 East 4th Street. This store will have a seating area for 30, a walk-in cooler, which will be a beer cave. It will have more than 400 square feet of serving area and more food for 30 people. And as such, it will qualify as a restaurant under the liquor code for a restaurant liquor license. Sheets will be offering beer to go up to 192 fluid ounces in one transaction. All beer will be kept in a lockable beer cave. Sheets will be selling wine to go via a wine expanded permit, which permits restaurant and hotel licensees to sell up to 450 milliliters bottles of wine to go. Although the store will be open 24/7, beer and wine sales will be limited to Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 1:45 a.m. when the beer cave is locked, Sundays, 9 a.m. to 1:45 a.m. All wine sales statutorily must cease at 11 p.m. at night. With respect to on-sale consumption of beer, Sheets is required by the PLCB to offer beer for on-premise consumption. It's something that they would rather not do, and we actually fought the PLCB for about 2.5 years over this issue, and it went to the state Supreme Court. Sheets does allow for consumption on the premises. It's very limited. It's not advertised. It's not a substantial part of the business. There's no happy hours or drink specials advertised or not advertised. There's no draft beer, no entertainment on premises, no pinball machines or live music for that matter, and no liquor sales. Sheets has a comprehensive alcohol management program in place, and it starts with their carding policy. They card anybody who appears to be younger than 35 years old. Sheets uses a card scanner to identify fake IDs and underage IDs. Card scanner is part of the cash register system, so that if somebody brings a six-pack up and hands the cashier a card and they run it through the scanner, and it's a fake ID or an underage ID, big red numbers on the cash register say no sale, so that it can't even be processed at that point. All the people in Sheets store receive RAMP training. It's a Responsible Alcohol Management Training Program. It was developed by the PLCB and the Bureau of Liquor Control Enforcement. RAMP trains people how to recognize fake IDs, how to recognize visibly intoxicated persons, how to recognize pass-off situations where someone who's 21 is attempting to purchase beer and or wine for somebody who is under 21. With respect to security, all Sheets stores have approximately 30 to 40 security cameras that cover the entire inside of the store and the entire outside of the store. There will be a camera inside the beer cave and also on the door of the beer cave. These cameras are monitored on the premises by management and employees and off premises by Sheets Security Operations Center, which is a building down in Altoona, which monitors each and every security camera in each and every Sheets store. You'll notice Sheets employees oftentimes have a lanyard around their neck or an earbud. They can communicate with the Security Operations Center in Altoona by pressing it or pressing the lanyard. They can talk directly to the Security Operations Center, who in turn can talk directly down to the employee. They have protocols for whatever the situation might be. Whenever an employee does that, the security camera in that store that the employee would appear on comes up on the screen, so the security manager at the SOC can see the person and interact directly with that person. Sheets has a proven record as a responsible owner and operator of licensed premises. They've been licensed for over 20 years now in the state. They have 278 stores, making a significant investment in the city of Bethlehem. They will protect that investment with responsible management and well-trained employees, and for those reasons, I would ask that you pass a resolution permitting the transfer of the license into the city of Bethlehem, and if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Kozar. I'll open it up to members of council. Any questions or comments from members of council regarding the liquor license transfer? Well,
I was wondering if you could just say a little bit more about on-premises consumption. That what constitutes a store as being ready for on-premises? Is it a certain number of seats, indoors, outdoors?
The minimum requirement to hold a restaurant liquor license in the state of Pennsylvania is seating for 30, food for 30, and a minimum of 400 square feet. It's not a big requirement, and that's why Sheets is puts the 30 seats in the store to qualify for the restaurant liquor license. With respect to service for on-premise consumption, as I said, we fought that battle and we actually lost in the state Supreme Court, one of the few cases that we've lost in the Supreme Court. And essentially the Supreme Court said, you know what, if you're gonna sell beer to go, you must at least offer it for on-premise consumption. Sheets does offer single cans of beer for on-premise consumption. Very rarely happens. I talk to all the managers and district managers, and You know, they literally can count on one hand how many times somebody sits down to drink a beer in the store. The business model is you come in, you buy some food, you buy a six-pack of beer or a bottle of wine, and you go home. And you fill up with gas before you leave.
Thank you. Are you accompanied by a Sheetz representative?
Yes. Travis Miller is sitting right there. He's the local district manager for the area.
Okay. Travis, I'm going to say to you the same thing I said to our colleagues from Wawa when they were here, which is that we have many wonderful breweries, local breweries, distilleries, and wineries in Bethlehem and around Bethlehem. And I don't know if you can answer this, but do you reserve some shelf space for local brewers, wineries, distillers?
So it varies by
sure,
location.
If you don't mind just coming to the microphone to sort of picks up your response.
So it varies by location and supplier, so there's very specific requirements for distributors in terms of who you can use. So if we have a location in one county or one township, it might have to use a certain distributor, and those distributors carry X amount of suppliers' products in them. So it really depends on the location. We do use Shangy's, who has like a very wide array of offering, and they've gotten some local breweries involved. We've done some not local to here, but we've actually worked with breweries in other parts of the state and actually around the company that we operate in to establish some like Sheetz branded beers. So like we've collaborated with them and then sold those in our stores. So that's something that we haven't done as much recently, but we were doing periodically for a couple of years not long ago. So yes and no. It really depends on what's offered, but I can tell you from my end, I work closely with Nick Gear, who's our like head of our beer and wine sales for the company, and make suggestions to him and work with him on products that we're able to have there. And I also work closely with a lot of the reps for our suppliers in terms of what they're offering, because they're able to authorize certain products for us as long as we approve it. So it's kind of a working relationship in terms of they say, hey, this might sell well. Can we get this on your shelves? And then I'll work with our department to make it happen too. So it just depends.
Well, I appreciate your interest in supporting local businesses. And to the extent that it is in your hands to reserve some shelf space for local, I encourage you to do so. And I would say it's probably good business practice as well. I think a lot of Bethlehem residents would be pleased to see our local businesses on your shelves.
I agree. I would like it too.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? All my questions were answered. Mr. Kozar, thank you. Thank you, sir, for coming out tonight. And then I will now turn to public comment. If there is anyone in the audience who wants to make a comment, this is solely about the intermunicipal liquor license transfer. I'll start to the left. Was there anyone on the left side of the room who wants to make a comment? I turn to the wide center. To the right. All right, well, thank you. Thank you again, Mr. Kozar. And then the resolution is going to be Resolution 10A on tonight's agenda for council vote. Right. The public hearing is adjourned. Moving on to our regular agenda, I do want to announce that the removal of agenda item 9A, that new ordinance was tabled at committee. So we will be removing agenda item 9A this evening. Moving on to the approval of minutes for October 17, 2023. Any comment on minutes? No comment. Minutes stand approved. Moving on to our public comment, starting with any subject not being voted on this evening. As is customary, we will allow a 5-minute time limit for everyone. We have 7 individuals already signed up. So starting with Sally and Will Weber.
Hi, Sally, Will Weber. We'd like to thank you for 66 West Elizabeth Avenue. We've been there for 42 years.
Thanks for allowing us to speak tonight about our ongoing issue. We'd like to thank the Bethlehem Press for bringing our issue to the forefront. We've had a lot of positive reactions since their article was published. It's nice to feel someone is hearing us. Brief recap. We are away for 35 days this winter, and our water bill for that quarter claimed we used 54,000 gallons of water. Our total usage for 2022 was 26,000 gallons. We have some coming in to check the house twice every week, inside and outside. Our neighbors also are watching and taking good care of things like salting the sidewalk. We'd like to respond to some questions Councilwoman Kwiatek raised at the last meeting. We appreciate her concern and interest and the questions that were raised. Mr. Buscola felt it was inappropriate to give our details. However, we have no problem sharing them. They're not as top secret. We sent each of you an email with our providing the timeline of the steps we've taken since we received the bill in March. One question asked was, could someone have stolen this water? We were very curious about that because we do have an outside spigot. Our neighbors, one parks by the spigot daily, never saw any running water. A tanker truck holds about 9,000 gallons. So if someone wanted to steal that much water, they'd need six tanker trucks pulled up to the house to take it. If the spigot had been opened and left running, Elizabeth Avenue would have been either a lake or an ice skating rink. And I think someone would have noticed that. Next, we'd like to talk about the 31-year-old meter. It's in place 11 years beyond its recommended life. After it was replaced, we witnessed the testing. The only test performed was to see if the meter was properly measuring water. We knew that was happening because we were monitoring our water daily. However, we did request tests to be run to see if the 10,000 spindle or cylinder was functioning properly. We feel one possible answer is that the spindle malfunctioned and skipped to the 5. The water department refused to perform that test because it would take too long. So we'll never know if that might have been the cause. But saying the meter is working 100% and sound is invalid because only one test was performed. Older car odometers work on the same system, and they begin skipping as they age. Most cars run for about 10 to 15 years. Our meter was 31 years old. So there is a chance that maybe the cylinder would skip. Now, on to the water department's mantra, which we heard from every person we dealt with. A toilet must have been running. No toilet was running. But even if one was, a running toilet wastes approximately 200 to 250 gallons of water daily. It would take 240 days for a running toilet to waste 54,000 gallons of water. We were gone 35 days, not even close. Our house is 100 years old, and that amount of water could have gushed from a broken pipe. But where were the caved-in ceilings, caved-in walls, things floating in the basement? Did the pipe miraculously fix itself before we returned? Like a spider loses a leg and grows it back? That's why this situation defies logic. Dealing with the water department has been extremely frustrating. We've jumped through hoop after hoop to get nowhere. We found them to be dismissive and smug, with no inclination to be logical or reasonable. We're not only the Bethlehem citizens to have been blindsided by these outrageous bills. The others we've spoken to were angry and frustrated after receiving the bill, but paid it just because they didn't have the time, the energy, or the money to fight it. We think that is what the water department expects will happen. We're the rarity. I'm curious to know how many disputes have been filed in recent years, and did a homeowner ever win one? Might be worth council looking into since you're the overseers. the water department appears to have carte blanche. This has been extremely disillusioning. This is not the treatment we expected from a city we've loved and lived in for almost 50 years. Nevertheless, we are still hopeful that City Council or the Mayor's Office will take a more active role with real oversight in any similar case that might arise in the future, especially as the city transitions to these new so-called smart meters. Thank you.
Thank you. And our next speaker is Mark Wooler.
This isn't a sneaky way to double team on the same subject. I'm going to speak about water meters, but in a different light. Specifically, I've been researching a lot about smart meters because, you know, we've been told that smart meters are probably the greatest thing since night baseball coming this way, right? And I think at the end of the last meeting, I think the director said that maybe a third of the city now has smart meters. I'm the proud new owner of a smart meter after they took out my 31-year-old obsolete meter that couldn't have possibly malfunctioned. Smart meters, and I don't know how much council has been told about them. They're not necessarily, you know, the water people always like to say that the meters are never wrong, they never fail, or virtually infallible. And smart meters are going to be way worse than the regular meters. They're going to fail on more occasions, and when they do, sometimes they're going to fail in a splendidly fantastic way. I did send a council, a couple council members, a little clip from San Diego where smart meters have just kind of gone belly up, and I hope that those council people look at them and share with others. So the smart meters, and this is something else I wanted to address when the director was up asking about kicking up the charges 8% or whatever. The smart meters are going to be more accurate. I'm sure that Mr. Boscolo would attest to that. And from what I've researched already, they'll be maybe 2 to 3% more accurate than the old meters. In other words, they're going to catch every drip. And that's why, you know, the water authority people love it. You know, picture a fly on a windowsill rubbing his front legs together with an ice cake that he's about to dive into. It's going to be more revenue in most cases, okay? So when you're looking at that 8% raise, remember that the people that already have smart meters are probably going to pay 2 to 3% more anyway, so it's no longer an 8% increase, it's 10 or 11%, which might interest somebody like Mary Jo as those meters go in. It's not just San Diego. You can look at Houston, go home and Google smart meters Houston, go home and Google smart meters DeKalb County, Georgia, and you'll delve into a nightmare of what happens. You know, people being charged from $85 a month, normally $1,200, to $3,200. Single parent with one kid in the house, $5,000 for a month. So when they go wrong, they go drastically wrong. Now, hopefully, that won't happen in Bethlehem. It'll be very smooth, and there'll never be a problem. I hope so, too, because I don't want to take another hit from the water department. I really don't. But I am going to monitor this stuff as it unfolds, and I'm going to probably put a Facebook page up. My working title is Bethlehem Citizens for Water and Sewer Oversight, and if things do go wrong, I want to have a record of people that are suffering consequences like we did. I've been in touch with this lady down in Georgia who's the head of an organization called Unbelievable DeKalb Water Bills. It's got a great name, Star McKenzie. I need a name like that if I'm going to head up this citizens group. But she's been guiding me through the process a little bit of how to do it. She started with maybe a dozen people that had high water bills, and now she has 5,000 people. But it's a disaster in DeKalb. The meter down there is a company called Census. And the meter that went terribly wrong is something called the iPearl. and that's what I just got put in my basement. A census hydrant, which gives me a little bit of pause. Now, she said the ones that went really bad down in Georgia were made before 2014. Mine says 2022, so maybe it's an improved version, I'm hoping. But as this stuff goes forward, again, I would just hope that council keeps an eye on it and scrutinizes the process, especially with these mega bills like we got, if more of those occur. And then finally, I'd like to reiterate what Sally said. I want to thank council for the opportunity to speak to you. I see my time's winding down, but there's an old Bedouin proverb that says, the dogs bark, but the caravan moves on. And, you know, I sort of look at council as the caravan moving on, and I'm barking over here, and I hope that you hear us a little bit. And when time comes that you scrutinize what's going on with smart meters. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mazzola.
I'm sorry, I have one last thing. The last time I was here, I left a check because I didn't want to accept any favors, and in my rashness and lack of sleep, I'd say, I filled it out wrong, I put the wrong date on it, but everything's perfect this time. So I'm going to leave this for water and sewer. It's $139.96, but you know, my Social Security check came in today, so I think it's not. I don't think it's going to bounce. I think it's all right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilber. Our next speaker this evening is Angela Mitchell.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Angela Mitchell. I reside at 430 Cherokee Street. And I'm here to talk about three items here tonight. And the first one is I am an Airbnb owner since 2018. However, we were closed during COVID, and I just never opened back up due to some medical constraints. And I'm obtaining some conflict information from the housing division and the zoning division. And I'm trying to understand what is going on. Why is the city of Bethlehem going to court? Why haven't I been able to renew my license since the closure in 2020? Is it true that the city of Bethlehem does not want Airbnb in residence anymore? If so, why? Can someone tell me exactly what is going on? I've been going back and forth every year since they allowed us to reopen back up, but I just keep getting conflicting information. So I appreciate if somebody can direct me to who I need to talk to about this. The other thing, I want to thank the council member, D. Leon, Anna Smith, the director of Community Action Center of the Lehigh Valley. Saturday, we had a cleanup. We started in Enix Park and 701 Pawnee Street and worked us our way up to the 400 block of Cherokee Street. And my question is, what is it going to take to enforce the city ordinance regarding rental properties, landlords, and homeowner to clean up their front properties, maintain their trash, clean up, sweep up, and pick up their leaves, their trash, their garbage that is left on the sidewalk after the garbage collectors come and pick up the garbage. Wash and clean out their trash bins, as well as purchase or obtain cans with lids from their haulers. We got a lot of landlords that have garbage bins that don't have lids on them. And the other question I have is, when did the ordinance change with regards to recycling? I was informed that we do not have to recycle anymore since January 2023. Is this true or not true? The hauler issue needs to be placed on the agenda again, because garbage needs to pick up, need to be picked up at least 2 times a week per household, not 1 time. We need a unified garbage system that works for all. I don't know about you, but I'm tired of smelling the fragrance of garbage that permeates the air throughout the city of Bethlehem. Isn't this a health violation code? Can I make a motion that we revisit this garbage issue soon? Because I'm not the only person that's concerned about it. And finally, what's the status on placing the stoplight at the corner of Cherokee Street and Delaware Avenue? Stop signs at all 4 corners of Cherokee Streets and 4th Street, Cherokee Street and Dakota Street, and placing a speed bump on the street between Dakota and 4th Street. And in addition, why do we need landlord signatures instead of the tenants when in fact the landlords do not live in the property? I've been trying to get a petition together, and I want to do everything right, but it's like we need 70% of the homeowners to sign. Okay, a lot of the people that a lot of the houses on that block now, they're landlords, and some of them don't live in the city. So I'm just kind of concerned on how do I go about doing all this. But definitely a speed bump is needed. And so if I can get some feedback on that, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mitchell. One question I can't answer is we still do recycle here in the city of Bethlehem. And then I would ask you to stick around after the meeting. Ms. Laura Collins is our Director of Community and Economic Development, next to Mr. Alcohol, who you may be familiar with. And they can talk to you about some of the background as it relates to the Airbnb process and traffic and things like that, and how that's controlled.
And I do have the code book for the landlords, but they don't follow it. So there's codes in here that are not being enforced, and how can we go about enforcing it?
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Mitchell. Our next speaker signed up this evening is Officer Rob Nicholson.
Both in council, incoming and outgoing, and future judge, I'm Robert Nicholson, the president of Bethlehem Star Lodge number 20. I wanted to provide you and the citizens of Bethlehem continued insight into what we provide and the difficulties our department faces. In October, we've had 4,681 calls for service, and we're at about 50,000 so far this year. These calls were for varying needs, such as something as simple as when Officer Brelo responded to a call for help and assisted a citizen in standing up after their lift chair broke. Or something as involved as when Officer Michael Oliva located a gun in the possession of an unauthorized individual on a routine traffic stop. We serve many roles. This past month, our department participated in various community events, trick-or-treat, parades, and marathons. We also assisted at community well-being events, such as when Officer Arvin Flores assisted with the National Medication Take-Back Day, where citizens dropped off prescribed medication they no longer needed to be turned over to the DEA to be disposed of properly. Our officers also have maintained a focus on individual and community needs, making 37 referrals to the health department for citizens to receive help. These referrals were for things like assisting families whose loved ones suffer from dementia, autism, or who are prone to wander, and enrolling them in the Project Lifesaver program. These referrals also included assisting individuals with housing needs, family needs, mental health assistance, suicide prevention, and just to simply assist overwhelmed family members with caring for their loved ones which has proven to be too difficult for them. Our officers also have protected the citizens of Bethlehem in incidents such as in September when Officer Jeffrey Russell attempted to free a citizen from the path of a vehicle that had begun to roll in their direction. During this incident, Officer Russell attempted to get her out of the way, and he himself became pinned between that vehicle and a police cruiser, needing to be freed by the other officers on scene. She was unharmed, but he was not. He was out for about 6 weeks. Also, when Officer Michael Ozoa and Officer Jonathan Ezzo conducted an investigation that resulted in an arrest of a male who possessed a large amount of narcotics on his person, and also a ghost gun. Ghost guns are made with unchangeable parts, and there are no serial numbers on them, nor was there on this one. And again, Officer Ezzo, a couple days later, was injured and out of work after tracking down a after a foot chase with a suspect in the middle of the night. Our officers have also set professional examples amongst outside agencies. For example, Officer Mark Kunzman recently received recognition from a Dewey EMS station due to his assistance while they responded to a call within our city. It should be noted that they originate in Hellertown. Also, in October, our department responded to a barricaded subject on 11th Avenue where a wanted party refused to surrender himself. This incident resulted in Bethlehem's emergency response team being activated, resulting in over 15 officers responding, 5 officers from our crisis negotiation team, and almost everybody else that was on duty that day. They were led by team leader Sergeant John Casella. This one incident required the involvement of a large portion of the department for over 8 hours, and was ultimately concluded with the wanted party in custody thanks to the dedication, ability, and professionalism of our officers, which was present in all these examples. While all our calls are important in the well-being of our city, these last two are important to look at, especially with our current focus on recruitment and retention and its effects on manpower. All of our public services are feeling the strain of maintaining staffing levels. But there are various ways they can adapt where we cannot. When all of our EMS units are on calls, they are unable to respond, we rely on mutual aid, such as in the case of Officer Kunzman. This is when other agencies such as Dewey, Bethlehem Township, or Hanover respond to our city to respond to medical calls until our EMS frees up. When there are fire calls that reach a third alarm, they have the ability to utilize neighboring fire departments to respond to calls with the city until they are available. When the police department has incidents such as the call on 11th Avenue, we do not have the ability to routinely call other agencies. When we are backed up, citizens wait. This should be a concern because we are a department that is currently operating with a deficit in unfilled positions within our department, which when you factor in officers who are on the roster but unavailable for duty, becomes greater. This is at a time when 6% of our department is currently eligible to retire at any time, and that number rises to 12% by June. We are going to lose more officers soon. When you consider it takes over a year to hire and train an officer, we have to be proactive with every test. Currently, we are in a period where we are accepting applications. This period began on October 5th. Anyone hired during this period, if successful, will not be an individual officer until May of 2025, 18 months. Every test that goes by where we do not separate ourselves from the other departments in the Lehigh Valley and attract quality candidates puts us further behind the eight ball. We need to be proactive right now rather than reactive when it becomes too late. Thank you.
Thank you, Officer. Our next speaker signed up is Carol Ethward.
Sorry, call me Grace. All right.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me okay? Carol Etheridge, and I am from Mahoning Township, Carbon County. So thank you for letting me speak tonight. I am here representing Save Carbon County. We were here, I think, a couple of meetings ago to speak about Save Carbon County and sewage sludge and the sewage sludge that is applied in Carbon County. Well, we have good news to report. The Save Carbon County is happy to announce that the commissioners of Carbon County adopted a resolution asking federal and state officials to look at current laws regarding sewage sludge application due to its detrimental effects to our natural environment and citizens, if not properly managed and treated. As noted in our previous visit, Bethlehem City Council has a relationship with Synagro, the provider of sewage sludge to Carbon County landowners. Also noted previously, Bethlehem gets their water supply from Carbon County. And with the increase in the use of sewage sludge, it could be devastating. We have an opportunity to learn from other municipalities who have experienced the same situation with increased use of sewage sludge that is land applied and the impacts on water. We are asking the honorable members of the council to please take a closer look at their waste management processes. And we do hear a theme this evening of waste treatment and water. Safe Carbon County will continue to provide updates to the City Council. If you have any questions, please feel free to give us, contact us, or you can ask now. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Mr. Robert Virgilio.
Robert Virgilio, 522 Long Street. It's where I reside, and I was here once before bringing up the idea of crime mapping. So after that time, I went to the police department's link to crime mapping at the state of Pennsylvania, and I found that there's basically a website that lists all of the crimes that have taken place in Pennsylvania. From there, I went to Bethlehem's log of crimes, and I found that there's been 742 cases of theft, 20 cases of rape, 57 cases of burglary, 17 cases of robbery, 56 cases of motor vehicle theft, 4 cases of arson, 898 cases of assault to this point in time of the year. So it's not really what I would think a crime map would be. You can go further, another step ahead, and you get this map of all of these things that have taken place. So it's kind of confusing. So I just want to take a step back and just maybe present the notion or the idea that the city and perhaps Mayor Reynolds considers just having some sort of a police log, since the newspaper does not really keep us informed unless it's a serious crime like a shooting. And whether it's on a weekly basis, daily basis, I mean, the police department has to provide statistics to the state like I just read off. So why not provide those statistics to the public? Living on Long Street is a little different than where I used to live, which was the corner of New and Market Street. I owned a bed and breakfast for 36 years, my wife and I. Long Street is a side street. It's not as, there aren't as many residential properties on it. And further north on Long Street, a friend of mine who owns a car wash, which happens to be a very good car wash in Bethlehem, we were talking, and he just told me that on October 25th, someone burglarized his car wash. They didn't get any money because it's inside a safe that they couldn't break into, but they broke into the operation room. And that's a block away from me. And there's been other things that have happened in my neighborhood and in the other parts of the historic district that I'm finding out about. I just think it's important that the people of Bethlehem know what crime is happening in Bethlehem. The state even goes further on their part of this log or this registry for things like disturbing the peace. So we're not really getting an idea of what crime is taking place, and I would like to just make that something that perhaps the mayor can move forward or take some time to think about it. Maybe the police department can come up with something a little more easily understood or straightforward for the public. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Virgilio. Last person we have signed up this evening, Alan, I apologize if I'm misreading last name, Locker.
Locher,
thank you.
Good evening. Alan Locher, 438 High Street. I'm here tonight as the president of the Bethlehem Historic District Association. And the BHDA board believes that the Walnut Street Garage project is a matter of high importance to the historic district given its visibility and proximity to historic residential structures. It deserves careful and deliberate consideration to assure compliance with historic district guidelines, reviewed and determined by the HARB board and approved by this council, to preserve and protect the architectural integrity of the historic district, and to assure that the property interests of adjacent historic residences are protected. The BHDA has taken steps to inform our members of upcoming HARB meetings and council meetings where this project will be discussed. I attended two of the HARB meetings where the Walnut Street Garage was discussed, and I found it highly unusual. I'm a land preservation and land development lawyer for the BPA to request and obtain approval from a divided HARB and city council to demolish the garage before presenting and obtaining approval for a replacement structure. The BHDA and the historic district property owners are stakeholders in this process. And we were disappointed that the BPA did not provide development plans for the November HARB meeting. Now HARB will be under pressure to address this application in the last meeting of the year. And it's my recollection that the demolition of the garage is proposed for a very early 2024. So I'm here to request that a message be sent to the BPA to provide architectural plans and full site development plans well in advance of the December HARB meeting. And if it helps, the email address for myself is president@bhda.org. Any information that is available can be sent to me, and I will make sure that it's provided to our members to foster transparency and to promote public trust. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Logan.
I'll go around the room now as we went through our list of those who had signed up. Again, this is public comment for anything that is not being voted on this evening. Is there anyone on the left side of the room who hasn't had a chance to make comment? I turn to the wide center. Is there anyone in the center? I'll start with Mr. Shire and then work our way from left to right, my left to right.
Bill Shire, still at 1898 Avenue. I just want to follow up on Mr. Virgilio's remarks. It seems like the kind of information that he's asking for is extremely basic information that needs to be transmitted somehow to the citizens. Now, I understand there's only two functioning Bot Watches in the city now, which is too bad. And part of the problem is that the good citizens of Bethlehem don't want to go to Bot Watch meetings. Well, That is a problem. In my own neighborhood, we had a functioning Bot Watch, which is now dissolved because the one person responsible for it is in semi-retirement, shall we say. It's a real problem in the city of Bethlehem. People are occupied, my former next door neighbors, we don't have time to get informed about elections, so we don't vote. Well, then there's our people who vote and they're still not informed. It's a real problem, and I don't know the answer, but I think it's something we need to be thinking about. Getting the people of the city of Bethlehem more involved in their city. Now, the police can help here. I don't know how. I'm going to cite something in D.C., which I've done before. As you may recall, my working life was there. D.C. was once the murder capital of the United States, per capita. And it's improved a lot since then. The area I lived in was, shall we say, the second or third best of the eight wards. But we had our problems. And what this city, and each ward was about the same population as the city of Bethlehem. And Ward 3, west of Rock Creek Park, had about the same homicide rate. I didn't live in Ward 3, I lived in Ward 1. Population 80,000. But every ward had what was a citizen's, I forget the proper name for it. I'm not even sure it had a proper name, but it was more or less a citizens' police coordinating committee. And that the word coordinating is important. It was not a review panel, review board. Some of you might recall when Ismail Arcelet was a council member here, he had an idea for something like that, but it was misunderstood as a review board. And John Morganelli came down here with a 9-page written statement and blasted the whole idea, and it died. I still have a copy of that statement. It was a misunderstanding. What we did in D.C. was just got together once a month at the substation. Every ward had its own substation and deputy chief. And police told us what was going on, and we told them what was going on. And I've told the chief here a story, which I'm going to repeat now, about how the police and the citizens worked together to catch two murderers. It happened a block from where I lived. A young woman was staying with friends. She had been in Japan as an intern. She came home for lunch and found two guys eating lunch at the kitchen table. So they killed her, left, and the owners came home after work and found her body there. These two guys, one of them was wearing a sweatshirt, where these two guys had been seen in the alley behind the house, and someone had noticed a sweatshirt and didn't think of anything of it at the time. Referenced some university, I forget which one. But anyway, the police had a sketch, and here's where the cooperation came in. The citizens wanted to put that sketch on every single tree in the neighborhood, and the police said, no, 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 we want to catch these guys. And so the compromise was the sketch went in the rear rooms of every retail establishment in the neighborhood. And lo and behold, just like a deputy chief told me once when in his master's thesis, he found that perpetrators generally commit crimes within 6 blocks of where they live. One of these guys came in with that sweatshirt on, and the clerk went in the back room and called the police, and they got him and the other guy. This was an example about how simple coordination can work. Now, the city of Bethlehem, if it had the same population ratio for such a committee, would only have one, and that would be too wide. I think we should have one for South Bethlehem, one for West Bethlehem, and two for North Bethlehem. I'm exceeding my time, but one final point here. The cooperation was such that there was an annual award ceremony for the ward. And it was at the Washington Hilton, sometimes known as the Hinckley Hilton. There was dancing and there was a meal and so on, and everybody had a good time. That's something we could use here in the city of Bethlehem. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shire. Man behind Mr. Turner.
Francine Spivak, River Court Condominiums. I wanted to talk a little bit about the proposed Walnut Street Apartments. According to the Opening Doors Part 2 presentation, 1,052 new rentals are needed to get back to a 7% vacancy rate. And that would be 312 market rate apartments and 740 low and very low income apartments. Currently, there are a total of 685, most probably, I'm assuming, market rate apartments either completed, in progress, or proposed. And I'm citing 610 Flats, which has been completed and I believe recently opened. There are 75 apartments there. The Boyd Broad Street, which is in progress, there's 205 apartments there. The Hanover Avenue proposed complex, 317 apartments. The Marshall, which was formerly the Boys and Girls Club on 4th Street, 76 apartments. The Mint, which on six apartments. And 1247 East 4th Street, six apartments. That's 685 apartments. Do we really need an apartment building on Walnut Street? And I'm wondering when we start focusing again on low and very low income housing. And I am aware that Pembroke Village is in the pipeline, but I think we need to do something sooner than the couple years, 2 to 5, whatever the time frame is down the line. I was intrigued by Mr. Fowler's proposal last meeting to build a new facility for the police department. Perhaps this will attract new hires to the force, and perhaps the garage can be designed so that police vehicles can be securely parked there. I think this idea has merit and should be explored further. Thank you.
Thank you.
Terry Kloiber, 345 Grandview Boulevard. I hadn't even planned on talking today. I was just coming to watch. But a couple things. Those 317 apartments, Hanover Apartments, as we all know, is way overload for that small area. Just wanted to make that comment. Regarding the crime things going on, I had sent an email to Chief Cott, and she's got this on her list to take care of. Years ago, there used to be a checkmate program, which I sent her the card for. This is my mom's card. My mom passed in 2011, and I never took it down off the bulletin board. And I finally did and sent a copy over to Chief Cott, and she's going to check into doing it. It was just a simple card. It has a number on it. And if you saw something going on in the area, you just called the police and said, checkmate number, such and such. I want to report this is going on. And my mom, I know she used that card, and she used that number, and I'm kind of glad I held on to it. And I think it's something that, and I appreciate the positive response I've gotten from sending it to Chief Cott, and I think it's something that should be resurrected. So,
thank you. Was there anyone else in the center as we work our way over? Mr. Caratola?
Hi, I'm Marty Caratola, 813 Lawford Street, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Would it be in Veterans Day coming around? I'd like to say something since I was a veteran and I was in the Army. I didn't think I was eligible for benefits when I had some physical problems going on about a little over 10 years ago. However, I still do have some. But however, not quite as bad as being 100%. But however, I was 100% since 1968, but didn't know that I was eligible for benefits. So the thing is, if I didn't play guitar, I didn't look great when I was younger, I wouldn't have places to stay. I would have been homeless. but I played guitar, and we always found a place to crash back in the 60s and the 70s. As musicians, we had no problems. But the thing is, people, not everybody is gifted with talent to be able to do that. You have a lot of homeless people, and for Veterans Day, you know, especially, we should be reaching out for those veterans and see, especially if they're homeless, see what we can do to help them, because a lot of them can't think straight. I had a neurological problem. I was a trauma to the brain, which in 1986, I was diagnosed at Thomas Jefferson Hospital as having epileptic potential with a lesion to my brain. I stuttered and stammered profusely up until about 2014, and now you can't shut me up. But the thing is, I had a problem, really a serious problem, and a lot of veterans do, a lot of homeless people do. We need to do something for the homeless and the veterans to make it that they get the help that they need. There's this thing called tough love. We put the vagrancy laws back in effect. We got rid of the state hospitals in Allentown. You got people that have problems. They need to be reached out. They need to help. They're not going to come to you. They're not going to come for help. They can do it on their own. So they walk the streets without money, without a place to stay. And if they get sick in a lot of cities, as I know, in Red Bank, New Jersey, they get sick with COVID. They let them out the following day with COVID. And now the friend of mine that took this one person in, she's got COVID, she's in the hospital, she's dying. So the thing is, we got to reach out to the people that are homeless. Don't put them out on this, well, I don't think we do that here in Bethlehem. But the thing is, we need to try to help these people. One thing I'm doing for Veterans Day, I'm performing at the Mexico Lindo, as I do, the second Saturday of every month. And for everybody that comes to the Mexico Lindo on Saturday for some great Mexican food, tacos, enchiladas, whatever, great, clean, very clean environment. You can eat off the table if you drop your food on that. And I'm very skitsy. I won't do that. You know, any place. You won't catch me eating out of some dishes in most places. But anyway, at the Mexico Lindo, if you come out there and you buy one of my CDs. For every CD that I sell, I buy a veteran dinner. So you come there with a veteran friend and you get one of my CDs, which is probably going to cost less than a dinner, I will buy your veteran friend dinner. That's my thing that I'm doing for my country. Other than 2025, I'll be running for the mayor of the city. And I will not take any more money than an enlisted man or enlisted woman gets. That's the price that I would get if I get elected. Because when you get elected, that's your chance to serve your country. And if you don't think that's it, I don't know. Maybe you're not. Maybe you don't belong in this country. God bless you.
Thank you, Mr. Caratola. Was there anyone else in the center who wanted to make comment on anything not being voted on tonight? Turn to the right. Anyone who wants to make comment? All right, that concludes our first public comment. Moving on to the second public comment, which is anything that is on the agenda this evening to be voted on. We do not have anyone sign up in advance, so again, I'll go around the room, starting to the left. I turn again to the wide center. Anyone who wants to make comment on anything we're voting on? I turn to the right. Okay, thank you to everybody who came out tonight to speak. We're going to continue on with our meeting. Old business, any old business from other councilors? This is done. We'll move on to communications. Communication 6A.
On October 30, 2023, memorandum of tax resolution from Laura Collins, Director of Community and Economic Development, advising that the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development has awarded $500,000 Choice Neighborhoods Planning Grant to the City and the Bethlehem Housing Authority. Ms. Collins states that a resolution must be passed authorizing the mayor to execute the contract agreement in order to receive the award.
Resolution 10B is on the agenda. Communication 6B.
An October 31st, 2023 memorandum with an attached resolution from Edward Vascola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources, for a contract with Eastern Environmental Contractors Incorporated of Green Lane. Mr. Vascola recommends a change order for a 2021 contract for the wastewater treatment plant West Influent Pump Room Upgrade Project. The work will involve installing second floor control door and access hatches, wall plate, additional demolition, isolation valve replacement, east pump room control upgrades, and east wet well cleaning. It also will include the installation of flexible connectors on the west influent pumps to reduce vibration and associated vibration testing. The city has requested the changes to address unforeseen conditions and additional work items to improve system performance. The change order request would increase the cost of the project by $148,437, raising the total contract cost to $1,489,737. Substantial completion is required by February 29th, 2024, with final completion required by March 31st, 2024. There are no renewals.
Resolution 10C is on tonight's agenda. Communication 6C.
An October 30th, 2023 memorandum and resolution from DCEG business manager Tiffany Wisner. Wisner recommends a contract with Calabo Planning and Design of Chicago to act as the city's planning coordinator for its choice grant for the Steffco Pembroke community and produce a choice neighborhoods transformation plan. Calabo was part of the city's comprehensive housing strategy teams. Has extensive experience in applying for planning and implementation grants. Cost of the contract is $320,000. Completion date is December 31st, 2026. There are no renewals. The Choice Neighborhoods grant will pay $290,000 of this contract, while $30,000 of the city's match will cover the two additional contract components.
Resolution 10D is on the agenda. Communication 6D.
A November 2nd, 2023 memorandum with an attached resolution from Laura Collins, Director of Community and Economic Development, seeking a council resolution of support of an application for a $1 million statewide local share assessment grant. If received, the grant will be distributed to the Bethlehem Parking Authority to support capital improvements to the Walnut Street Garage.
Resolution 10E is on tonight's agenda. Communication 6E.
November 1st, 2023 memorandum and proposed resolution from Tiffany Wisner, DCEB business manager, recommending a contract with Lenhart Rogers Architecture and Interiors of Fort Washington. The firm would provide preliminary architectural and engineering feasibility analysis of potential shelter sites to determine location suitability. If after preliminary analysis the city wishes to move forward with the location, Lenhart Rogers can provide a complete set of construction plans for renovations to allow the city to solicit construction bids. The amount of the contract is $27,750. Work is to be completed by December 31st, 2024. There are no renewals.
And Resolution 10F is on tonight's agenda. Reports. I have nothing to report this evening. Other than I want to thank our Council Vice President, Ramsey Smith, for leading the last meeting while I was home. That was appreciated. Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. First of all, congratulations, Mr. Cologne, on your re-election last night. Well-deserved. A couple things. Just want to thank everybody with the city. We had to postpone the Halloween parade a week, obviously, and I know many of us had walked. That is not an easy process to be able to postpone that parade, but obviously the weather turned out extraordinarily well, and there's a lot of city work that went into it, so I just want to thank those employees for that. A couple other things, you probably saw that the trees have been delivered outside, so we're doing the tree lighting then on Friday, November 24th at 5 p.m., back to the day after Thanksgiving for everybody that's interested in attending. Also, next Wednesday, as many of you know, we are doing our Climate Action Plan annual meeting here in Town Hall at 9 a.m., which will be streamed as well. The nine implementation committees will have a one representative giving updates on all of the accomplishments of 2023 as well as the goals for 2024. Just a couple other things to add, just to follow up on some things that were mentioned, is I do believe that Mr. Boscola had sent that memo on the sludge issue to City Council. Is that correct? That was received. I know the citizens that have come down from Carbon County have left by this point, but I did want to let them know that we had responded to that memo as well to City Council. And then Mr. Nicholson, just a couple of things to follow up on his comments before. I meet with Mr. Nicholson and the chief on a regular basis. One of the things that I had talked to him about is obviously the idea that he's able to come to share information from the officer's point of view. As far as, you know, we try to share stories. The chief does, I do, as far as things that our police have been involved in positively, but I think it's great that he took me up on that and he's coming. A couple things there as far as our officers are concerned. Unlike the Fire Academy, which we know we can only send people to once a year, we can send people to the Police Academy twice a year. And just to review a couple of the numbers, and I believe that in December, chief starts, so then starting in January, our goal is to send five or six more officers. So going back then to December of 22, we will have hired 17 officers in 13 months. We sent five to the academy in December of 22. We sent six in June of 23. We hired one officer in September of 23 that I believe did not need to go to the academy. Is that correct? And then we're about to send five more. So we are going to continue that process as far as recruiting and sending officers twice a year. But we have that when we send those five officers after we hire them, because when we send them to the academy, that's when they technically are hired. That will then be 17 in the past 13 months. And if you go back to 22, there we had hired another four in the middle of the year and one at the beginning of the year. So I think that would then be 22 in a little over 2 years that we will have hired in the city of Bethlehem. And then just a couple other things, you know, Mr. Shire talked about the block watches. You know, I, like I think many members of council, have attended block watches in the past. I also want to thank our officers. They always show up to a block watch if they are held. And I had visited Mr. Fitzpatrick's, which is the one that Mr. Shire had referenced on a regular basis. But I will also say that our police interact with citizens on a regular basis in a lot of different ways, and they currently are doing that, whether or not it's through our schools, whether or not it's through our community, whether or not it's just, you know, biking or walking. Our officers do a great job now of finding different ways to be able to both utilize technology and be able to get out into our community. And one of the things that I've learned in the past 2 years is how often those success stories do involve citizens, and they do involve our community, whether or not it's our institutions, whether or not it's our schools or whatever that might be. So I do think that traditional block watch meeting is obviously one way that if people organize those block watches, if there's a way for us to help out. I know, as I said, the officers have always attended those, and I think a lot of our officers that have climbed up the ranks over the years during my time on council and here, I have seen that were the ones that used to go to those meetings, and that's something we absolutely encourage. But I will say that our current police force finds a lot of different ways to interact with our citizens on a regular basis and in a productive way to be able to gather information and help them to be able to solve crimes when they occur. And I believe that is it for my report, President Clark.
Thank you, Mayor Robbins. Turning over to Dr. Enix for our Finance Committee report.
Yes. The Finance Committee met tonight, Wednesday, November 8th, 2023 at 6 p.m. The committee discussed and voted on two agenda items. Item number one, Choice Neighborhoods Planning Grant. Item number two, 2024 proposed sewer rate increase. Committee votes were taken on both agenda items. The committee voted to recommend placement of item number one on tonight's council meeting agenda and tabled item number two. Gwendolyn Enix, committee woman, Finance Committee.
Thank you, Dr. Enix. We don't have any ordinances for final passage tonight. We're on some new ordinances, as Dr. Enix reminded us that the 9A had been tabled, so I'm going to ask the clerk to read 9B, bill number 39, 2023.
ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2023 General Fund Budget. Bill 39, 2023, is sponsored by Dr. Enix and Ms. Leon.
Discussion? Please call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Francis Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Moving on to resolutions. The clerk will read Resolution 10A.
Be it resolved that Sheets Incorporated has requested the approval by the City Council of the City of Bethlehem, Northampton County, for the proposed transfer of Pennsylvania Restaurant Liquor License Number R11795 from Aiello and Grigoli of 821 Main Street, Northampton Borough, Northampton County, to Sheets Incorporated, 4th and Emory Streets, Bethlehem, Northampton County, with the understanding that said transfer must be approved at a later date by the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board. Resolution is sponsored by Dr. Enix and Ms. Leon.
Discussion? I just want to thank Mr. Kozar for coming out and staying with us until the vote, and then also the representative that had answered Councilman Wilhelm's question from Sheets for being here to answer those questions this evening. We'll call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the City of Bethlehem and the Bethlehem Housing Authority have been jointly awarded $500,000 2023 Choice Neighborhoods Planning Grant, and that Mayor J. William Reynolds and Authority Executive Director John Ritter shall be empowered to execute the required grant agreement and any associated documents between the City, Bethlehem Housing Authority, and HUD that are necessary to receive and utilize these grant funds. Resolution is sponsored by Dr. Enix and Ms. Leon.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10C.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and/or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement and related documents as deemed necessary by the Solicitor with Eastern Environmental Contractors Incorporated to provide additional upgrades to the West Influent Pump Room at the City's Wastewater Treatment Plant. Resolution is sponsored by Dr. Enix and Ms. Leon.
Discussion. We'll call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Crimson Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10D.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and/or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute agreement and related documents as deemed necessary by the Solicitor with Collabo Planning and Design to produce a Choice Neighborhoods Transformation Plan. Resolution sponsored by Dr. Enix and Ms. Leon.
Discussion?
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10E.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the City of Bethlehem requests a $1 million statewide local share assessment grant from the Commonwealth Financing Authority to be used for capital improvements at the Walnut Street Parking Garage. Be further resolved that Mayor J. William Reynolds and Controller George Asso are empowered to execute all associated documents to obtain the grant. Resolution sponsored by Dr. Enix and Ms. Leon.
Discussion?
Quick question.
I'll start with Councilwoman Kwiatek and then work our way down.
I just wanted to confirm that this $1 million would be for the new garage and not for working on the old garage. Is that correct? That is correct. Okay. I just wanted to know more specifics as to what it's going to be used for. So is it going to be used for the rebuild of the new garage? And I guess my concern is I feel like I don't have enough specifics of the rebuild, and it needs, in my mind, needs to be discussed in further detail before I can vote on $1 million toward it.
I was going to say, it's a grant application, and I believe the grant applications are due by the end of November, I believe. So it's a statewide grant application. Obviously, nothing is going to be spent to build a new garage until it's approved as far as what the new garage would look like. So obviously, that process is that they are going to go to the Historic Market Review Board. They are going to vote on it, and then it's come to City Council. But obviously, it would be a situation if something didn't happen in that approval process, then money's not going to be spent that we're applying for from the state.
Will there be, I mean, I know there's information on the website, but are we going to be privy to specifics regarding the retail, and if so, at what point in time?
Well, it's a public process, obviously, when they put plans in, and then HARB will review it. Generally, I'm speaking as far as in the past, what happens with these large projects is HARB doesn't usually take one meeting. It usually takes a couple of meetings to be able to have that conversation. And then afterwards, after that certificate of appropriateness would come to City Council. So there will absolutely be public meetings to discuss that at the HARB that will, the plans will be available as well. So, I mean, you're talking about at least a couple of month process.
Right. I'm just thinking to get more of a better idea, would it be something that maybe we could think about and think about for the next meeting, a committee meeting to have like an overview for council to get a feel for what we're looking at as far as a rebuild. So just food for thought.
Any other comments from members of council? Ms. Leo?
So this is just for getting a grant to put toward whatever might be there in the future. So if whatever is going to be there, this would just be money to help add that. That's my understanding. And I'm making some things in my head that make sense to me, like why we would apply for this, but I don't understand. I'm assuming the Parking Authority doesn't have its own like DCED to apply for grants, so do we do this on behalf of them? Like, I understand they're a separate authority board and commission, so why are we applying for grants for them? Is it because they don't have internal capacity?
So LSA, there's a few author like eligible entities. So municipal governments are an eligible entity, or a redevelopment authority might be an eligible entity, but a parking authority is not an eligible entity.
Okay.
So, but it happens often with LSA grants that the city may be the applicant and be a pass-through for grant funds for a private development project, for example. Like a private developer also would not be able to submit their own application for LSA funds, but we have in the past supported a project as the City of Bethlehem and applied on effectively on their behalf.
Okay, so it's just one of those situations where we're acting as a pass-through in order for an entity to get grant funding.
Yeah, we're the entity that is applying and therefore like responsible for the funds. So, you know, I would say as a general matter, oftentimes like state or federal government will require that a municipal government or a certain type of authority apply, because when they're passing out the dollars, they want to know that, you know, you have, you know, you're on the line, right? Like, and you're on the line to make sure the grants get spent, the dollars get spent effectively, like correctly and in line with like all the regulations and things like that. So anytime that we apply, like we are taking that role on, like we're the grantee, and then we have, you know, sub-grantee agreements with, in this case, it would be the Parking Authority.
Okay, and it'd be my assumption that there wouldn't be a match to something like this. It would just a grant.
I don't believe this one has a match. No. Thank you.
And just to add to that,
about that one, you know.
And just to add to that, like the value of the Parking Authority getting a grant like this is that the Parking Authority, as we've increasingly tried to talk about, is like, the idea of the money going to the Parking Authority allows them the ability to then spend money on other things. And they've obviously increased how much money they support the Chamber with, the Southside Arts District with, and it's, I think that it's one thing, and I've said this to the Parking Authority before, is that they don't exactly talk about what their mission is as clear as it is as possible, and that's to regulate parking. And our parking problem is the fact that we don't have enough on-street capacity for everybody that wants to come downtown, which is the whole reason why we need off-street parking. With that being said, the ability to be able to get $1 million or anything from the state allows them then the financial ability to continue to be able to increase their funding for things throughout the city, which has been something that I've talked about for years, and the Parking Authority has been increasing in the last couple of years, is the idea that the more money they get from anything allows them to take whatever money they have in and not just sit on it. No, not that you think this, but you know, people think they get paid by commission or something. They don't. It is an opportunity though for them to be able to get more money out the door with their parking, whatever it is, parking fees, parking fines, money to pay at the garages, and every single one of these grants helps them. So I know we look at it just as the direct benefit it has to the Wall Street Garage property, but what it really does is it allows the parking authority to invest in as many things as people want them to, which is what they've heard from the DBA and the Chamber and the South Side Arts District and businesses on both the South Side and the North Side, which is why when these grant opportunities come up, we look at them and say, that's something that we're obviously going to put through because it allows them to be able to continue that mission.
Thank you for clarifying, because I wasn't understanding. Since it's a separate authority board and commission, I didn't understand why we would do that. But as gently as I can say this, as some of our private partners pull back some of their funding for programs, specifically on the South Side, that people have come to love and appreciate, we need to find ways to fund those programs. And if this is a way to fund the programs that keep the South Side vibrant and clean, I'm here for it.
Any other comments from members of council? I'll just be supporting this resolution this evening. Anytime we can look at getting potentially, because Ms. Collins, correct me, this is for the application, correct?
Yes, this just authorizes us to apply.
So anytime we can potentially get up to $1 million without any match commitment to help offset what's going to be an expensive project, regardless of what that final project's going to look like, as we have discussed at previous meetings, and my opinion that I'd shared, that I think that garage has come to the end of its useful life, and whatever the replacement's going to look like, it looks a lot better financially for the parking authority to have to come up with $1 million less towards that project. So I will be supporting this resolution this evening. Any other comments or questions from members of council? I'm going to ask the clerk to call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatkowski?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Cramson-Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
And Mr. Blum?
Aye. Resolution passes 7-0. Clerk will read Resolution 10-F.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Lenhart Rogers Architecture and Interiors to perform suitability analysis for potential shelter sites. The resolution is sponsored by Dr. Enix and Ms. Leon.
Discussion. Councilwoman Cramson-Smith.
I just want to get clarification. So do we have like a specific site in mind that we're going to have them analyze? And also, when we earmarked money toward the consultant to look at the shelter, I thought that this was included. I thought we had talked about it before, that we said that any architectural analysis would be part of that study, that consultant fee.
So during the development of the comprehensive, of the strategic plan to address homelessness, we did have Michael Baker do an architectural assessment at a site that we were looking at that time. That site is no longer available, but you know, moving forward as we're looking at sites, we're going to continue to need to do that sort of work, and we don't have Michael Baker on, you know, permanent retainer to do that work, right? Like, they did it as the process was evolving of developing the plan, but now finalized the plan, we've presented it, we've done the story map, we've really like closed out that work. And you know, as to specific properties, like we are looking at specific properties. We're not in a position to talk about specific real estate or property addresses publicly. We can do that, I suppose, in executive session or something, but I think for probably obvious reasons, we won't talk about like specific property addresses here in this setting.
So it wasn't, there wasn't, the language in that contract for that consultant did not say that if we found the property that they would then do a feasibility study architecturally.
So the study, if you recall, did two things. Like, first, fairly comprehensive cost estimation for a variety of different types of construction projects. So we looked at, for example, if you do a new build, generally, if you do a rehab of an existing community building or a rehab of a motel or a hotel. So they did that analysis for us, is what we expected. They also went, you know, a step further and did a specific site study, because that was an option at the time, because there was a property that we were looking at specifically. And that really, I think, satisfied what was contemplated under that contract.
So if we have a site and we're going to have them do this and then that doesn't work out, are we going to have to pay another fee every time we have a site?
We would not put millions of dollars towards any site that we didn't first study and get a clear understanding of, you know, can a certain site fit the number of units that we need? Can it fit the type of units that we need? Can it do so within HUD regulations? And, you know, is it this specific site cost effective? I mean, we have to do that for any site that we look at.
I understand. I guess I'm just disconcerted.
It would be fiscally extremely irresponsible for us to not do that kind of work for any site that we look at.
My concern is, and it's not that I won't support this because I feel the need, we really need to get a shelter, but my concern is with this sort of spending so much money on consultants, and I'll be honest, I guess I will say I hope in the future that, I didn't feel that we got our money's worth out of, you know, the consultants that we did for the comprehensive housing study, and it's a shame because now we're spending more money on further consultants.
Well, it's a different type of work. There's planning work, and then there's specific site work for architectural and engineering analysis. I mean, it's just
consultants that can do, you know,
one that does planning and one that does architectural and engineering analysis.
I would just add that it is also in this situation, it's kind of like if you're paying a lawyer and you're only paying them for certain work. And we had paid Michael Baker to do certain work at that time. But it is like anybody would go through any type of, it's when people enter into agreements of sale or something, and then they do their due diligence and they spend money to do the engineering, things like that. That is just not, like, we do not have that capacity in-house to be able to go and do that in a responsible manner or in a legal manner. Like, we don't have anybody here that has that level of expertise that's a current city employee. So it's not different than when Ed Vascola or Mike Alcall hires an engineer or an outside paving company or somebody else to come in to provide some level of expertise. It is obviously a situation that this is unique in of our ability to be able to use the complicated nature of what federal dollars are into a property to be able to do this in a way that meets what the goals are. So it is also a situation that we would obviously not be bringing forward this now if we did not think that there was a good chance or a reasonable chance that this was going to be worth the opportunity. But the idea that we would, it's just an impossibility for us to ever commit to spending or having other people or partnering with a private operator to spend millions of dollars without studying how much it's going to cost to be able to outfit that building. So it is a situation that, as with everything, if it was work that we were able to do in-house, and we have the smartest people around in city government, in our engineering departments, in our legal department, but there are some times where there's capacity to do work that it is not something that we are able to do, that we have the time to do or the expertise to do. But it is our absolute hope that this would be a situation that we wouldn't be coming here if we didn't think that there was a good chance for this to work out. But there's not another way to do it.
I understand what you're saying. What I'm saying is we already put a lot of money, a significant amount of money out in for a consultant for the homeless shelter. And I just feel in retrospect it would have been good if they could have given us, you know,
and
feasibility study like this. I just hate to see us continuing to put more and more money out there, but I understand.
It's expensive to build a capital project. That's just the reality of doing a project of this scope. There are costs associated with doing due diligence. There will continue to be costs associated. That's the nature of entering into this kind of work. That's what we're signing up to do, that type of due diligence. It's completely irresponsible to just pick a site and not do the kind of work that's necessary to understand if we can make it work.
I understand, and I don't think it needs to be explained repeatedly. What I'm saying is I just feel like it's a shame that we spent so much money on consultants, over $200,000, that I felt that, you know, that money could have gone and been spent in a more efficient manner.
And the last thing that we will say on our side, and we are also hearing the same thing that you're saying, is that and we talked, we spent hours talking about this, is we have learned a lot by being able to go into a situation. Once again, we did not have the expertise to be able to go get that data without hiring other additional personnel within our office. So we spent specific slides in our presentation talking about what the value was of what we did, and what we were able to learn to get to this place, which is a lot deeper than just using a word like consultant. But it was not work that we were able to do, and we feel very confident going forward that it was the best way to go forward. And we are absolutely hopeful that this is going to work out, and we will be able to look back and say that this was a necessary step for us. Thank you, Mr. Clark.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? Ms. Leon?
I like the idea of having an executive session, because I feel like there's maybe some context that could be given to clarify all of our questions. So if that is even a possibility, I just say that's probably a good idea.
I would say that's something that Ms. Collins and I could speak about with Mr. Pinella while we have him, about what our capacities are to have conversations as a group, or how we would have to manage something like that. I do understand and agree with Ms. Collins that for obvious reasons, with just impacting a market or our ability to potentially negotiate with any piece of real estate, that we shouldn't publicly discuss specific parcels. But that's something that can be discussed outside of this meeting for what our potential options are, just for everybody on council to be informed about the process. Any other questions or comments from members of council? Also, clerk to call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatkowski?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Grampson-Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Resolution passes 7-0. I'll accept a motion and a second to consider resolutions 10G through 10J as a group.
So moved.
There's
a motion on the floor.
Okay, never mind that.
Second. Motion by Councilwoman Wilhelm, second by Councilwoman Kwiatek. Discussion on the motion to consider them as a group. Ms. Leon,
I had a quick procedural question, but it's about one specific one. So if we're going to consider them all, then it's something I just ask the solicitor after. It's not that
yes.
Big of a deal.
Understood. Any other discussion on the motion to consider them as a group? We'll call the roll on the motion.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Grampson-Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Motion passes 7-0. I'll ask the clerk to read the certificates of appropriateness.
Certificates of appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of Pennsylvania Legislature, Bethlehem Resolutions, are hereby granted for 412 East 4th Street to install a double-sided blade sign onto the existing metal scroll bracket and vinyl graphics onto the storefront window. 30 East 4th Street to replace existing wall signage with a new non-illuminated wall sign. 117 East 4th Street to revise the building facades for a project that previously received certificate of appropriateness in November 2021. And also 117 East 4th Street to finalize details and finishes for a project that previously received the certificate of appropriateness in November of 2021. These resolutions are sponsored by Dr. Enix and Ms. Leon.
Discussion on the COAs. Ms. Leon.
The ones for East 4th Street, the permissions were given back in 2021 when it was owned by someone differently. And while it's literally, it has nothing to do with the work that is being done there. Those HCC meetings went very well, and I'm very appreciative of the new owner's response to all the considerations for that project. I was just wondering if you could explain to me how or why, if a property changes hands, like in our historic district, why it doesn't have to come back before us before height considerations or anything like that. So if one owner has it and then sells it, why is it that the height that was allowed for the first one kind of carries over to the second?
Generally speaking, these exceptions are just travel with the property, not the owners. You can't change when the building actually exists, as it's changing hands, you can't mandate that the next, if you have a 20-foot building, you can't mandate that new owners now make it 18 when it was pre-existing as 20. So it's grandfathered in and continues going forward. It would be like if you bought a house
It had a deck that was 50 feet long, and we had an ordinance that mandated it 40 feet, but that 50-foot deck was put in before that ordinance was in place. That deck would be grandfathered in. We wouldn't be able to mandate that the new owners do anything with that. So grandfathering it would be the general answer.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Dr. Ward.
Yeah, I just also wanted to make a comment about 117 East 4th Street, and not that building in specific, but I'm not going to be up here for many more weeks, so I just want to implore council, implore the administration, implore incoming council and our citizens to think about shade when it comes to our public parks. We have a gem of a public park in South Bethlehem that runs east to west, so the particularly vulnerable properties along that park are on the south side because the way the sun hits can cast shadows on the park. And right now we don't have a park ordinance. We have HARB, which is basically supposed to make sure that the building is appropriate for the historic district, but it doesn't have anything to do with shadows. And there's no formal review in the process, from what I understand, of what shadow casting on the park will look like, particularly in the wintertime when the sun is low in the horizon and the shadow is cast longer. And I just say this because these properties are very vulnerable on the south side. And while I support 117 East 4th Street, I do think that we should give consideration to shadows on our parks, and especially because it really is it's an issue of equity, because the taller you build, the people who are going to be up there are having the sunlight, but the people who are down on the ground are not. And I just ask that next time we are considering projects on the south side, understand that there is no review process for shadows, and how does that impact our public park. I have every faith that the administration is going to take that into consideration when building projects and discussions are undertaken, but I just wanted to put it back out there again, because I do think Bethlehem should have a shadow ordinance, and that we should somehow formalize the evaluation of the impact of buildings on our parks as the development process goes forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Any other questions or comments from members of council? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatkowski?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Gramson-Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
And Mr. Klum?
Aye. The COAs pass 7-0. Moving on to new business. Talked about our 2024 budget meeting schedule. I'll accept a motion and a second to set the date for adoption of the 2024 budget on Tuesday, December 19 at 7 p.m. here in Town Hall. Motion by Councilwoman Leon.
Second.
Second by Councilwoman Wilhelm. Any discussion? We'll call the roll on the motion for the budget adoption.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Gramson-Smith?
Aye.
Dr. Enix?
Aye.
And Mr. Klum?
Aye. Passes 7-0. I'm going to go over the 2024 budget meeting dates and topics. I believe it's Tuesday morning coming up that the mayor will make his budget presentation, and then we'll have our first budget hearing next Wednesday at 6 p.m. I do remind those in attendance, those who are following along either currently or in the future on the YouTube broadcast, that our budget hearings historically are some of the least attended meetings that City Council has. I'll share my experience. The first City Council meeting I ever came to when I seriously started taking interest in our local government was a budget hearing where water and sewer was being presented, and I didn't understand anything that was being discussed. I came in off the street because I lived down the street, and really took the time to educate myself. But when we hear certain feedback throughout the year about all the different things that come out of City Hall, the budget is what drives those expenditures. And council knows this, and most of the people following along do, but I do think it is important for those who take a keen interest in City Council operations and city operations, how we spend our money. It starts at these budget hearings, and sometimes they can be bland, I'll say politely, but they are important. And I know just this year alone, there have been reference to certain things that have happened where I've simply answered, it's on this page of the budget book, and it's reviewed in the part of this process. So again, I encourage anyone who has been following along and attending meetings
to, if you're available, attend those and see what it is that we're planning on spending our money on next year. The first budget hearing will be Wednesday, the 15th, at 6 p.m. That's going to cover the water fund revenue and expenses, the water capital budget, the sewer fund revenue and expenses, the sewer capital budget, our public works department, the liquid fuels fund, the stormwater fund, and the non-utility capital fund. The following budget hearing will be Tuesday, November 28th, also at 6 p.m., and that's going to cover the golf course enterprise fund, administration's expenses, council mayor, treasurer, controller, and the law bureau, our general fund revenue, our general expenses, our civic expenses, and our debt service. Third budget meeting scheduled for Thursday, November 30, 6 p.m., to cover Community and Economic Development Department, the Community Development Block Grant Fund, our Police Department, and our Fire Department. And then our final meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, December 12, also at 6 p.m. This meeting is scheduled for amendments, if anyone on council proposes amendments, and that will only occur if there's something to discuss that night. And we, as is custom, we have a backup date scheduled for Wednesday, December 13 at 6 p.m., and that would be as we get into the cold months. If for some reason we have to cancel a meeting, we would simply push all those back a day. So again, thank you for listening to those following along. Mr. Mayor, I welcome any comments about the budget.
Just a couple things about the budget. We will not take it personally, called the hearings bland. We will try to make them exciting.
Prove me wrong, Mr.
But,
Mayor.
But yeah,
prove
it's, you know, I would agree with you that they're really important, and everything we do is interconnected to things throughout the city. And one of the things that we're going to talk about both next Tuesday and at all the budget hearings is, like, the budget process is not like a month or 2 month thing. Ms. Lazarczyk and Mr. Evans are working on it the whole year, and what we're going to talk about are those trends and things that might not go up this year that you're looking at in the future might be going up, or how, when we're trying to save money and make it sustainable as far as sustainable revenues are concerned, or where we use one-time expenses. And it's really important, like, we look around, I mean, there's been other budget articles about other cities, and there's no conversation about spending one-time revenues for recurring expenses. And this is, the budget hearings are the time when we really are able to hear the details, not just about how we're spending the money in 2024, but what are the plans for 25, 26, 27, 28? What does our future debt look like? What are our capital expenses look like? What is it, what's the trends as far as our medical is concerned? Because all of those things lead to the stability and the financial flexibility to be able to invest in the things that we want to invest in. But those stories can only come out when you have the budget hearings. And the other thing about the budget hearings that I have always found as a council member, and now as part of the administration, so valuable, is you have an opportunity to hear from employees that we don't hear from any other time during the year about all of the amazing work that they're doing. And every single department we have, whether or not it's the police or water and sewer or public works or community economic development or fire department or any of our departments, we have employees that are doing amazing things every single day. And they those days turn into weeks, turn into months, turn into years, and they lead to the quality of life that we have in the city of Bethlehem. And there's no time during the year, partly because of the nature of these meetings where we're voting on things in front of us, there's no time during the year where we have as much of a time to be able to tell those type of stories. Now, Mr. Clone, to your point, why those stories are not as interesting as other things throughout the year has been something I don't understand for 16 years, because those are really the important parts of the city, is what we do on a day-to-day basis that leads to the incredible services we have and the quality of life we have in the city and the financial stability we have. So we, as a staff and as a city, are very much looking forward to this process over the next 6 weeks. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other new business for members of council before we adjourn tonight?
I'm sorry, I know everybody's just going to leave, but I have some questions for our chief, if you don't mind. So a couple months ago, a bit ago, we changed the requirements for our cops. One of the requirements, we waived like schooling and stuff like that. And I was wondering if the changes that we made have helped with pulling more people or opening doors for more people to take the test and be cops. Have those changes borne out any like real?
So we are currently accepting applications right now, and it's a little bit too early to comment. The application period is open until, I believe, January 4th, but it does appear that we're receiving more applications.
And to the crime mapping, I know that we're all gassed about JS. I love that for us as a city. But are there like legal constraints to how much data you can share with the public about crime, and if we have citizens that want to engage in this type of like, you know, community policing with you, how much can we share?
It's a sensitive subject because obviously we don't want to, if there is an assault that's domestic related that occurs at a residence, we want to be mindful of the involved participants' confidentiality with the Criminal History Record Information Act. The site that the Pennsylvania State Police offer that we participate in when we report our data will give you a general vicinity on the crime map, but it will not give you the exact 123 Main Street, and will give you the participants. There are various programs out there that are a little bit easier to use, user-friendly, like Lower Saucon Police Department has. However, there's a cost associated with that, a yearly fee.
That's it. I mean, I have some statements about the precinct, so you don't have to hang out at the mic if you don't want. But I think it's been two council meetings that we've talked about. People have talked about the precinct and the parking garage, and we haven't talked about it much as a council, but I think I've talked to you ad nauseum over the past 2 years about my desire for Bethlehem to build its own standalone precinct from a victim advocacy standpoint, from so many standpoints, and I appreciate that. People care about this, but when I consider the parking deck and its proximity to Main Street and how hot out of the gun sometimes the cops have to come with those cars, I'm wondering if that's the best place for a precinct is on Main Street. Do we really want our SUVs barreling down Main Street if that's the closest point? And I hope that we continue to have these conversations, but I hope that we, as a community, understand that we have an amazing chief of police who is very much into community policing, as most of our cops are. And a decision that's this large should definitely lie in the hands of our chief of police and the people that are beyond educated to do this work. And it is not a small lift. I think Easton was like $11 million, and they have a fraction of the police force that we have. So it's not an easy lift. It's not an easy discussion. But there are conversations being had, like, about how do we get these things done. I've attended like 17 trainings. It's not easy to do, but I think in time it is something that we can, as a community, do. I think that there's a need for it, but it is not something that we can just see a vacant piece of land and put a police precinct there. That wouldn't be safe for anyone. That's all I have.
Any other new business from members of council? This meeting is adjourned. Get home safely. Thank you.